Hey everyone, this is Tony Harnell from TNT, and you're listening to Cobras and Fire. Remember, rock is not dead.
You're listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast, part of the Decibel Geek Podcast Network, featuring special guest, singer, songwriter, Tony Harnell. I'd like to welcome to the program Tony Harnell, singer. He's from artists like Morning Wood, Westworld. You have a new album coming out with your band Starbreaker. You're in Skid Row. But I think most of the listeners to this show are familiar with you, or at least first became familiar with you, largely the same way I did, which was with your band TNT. Tony, how are you this evening?
I'm great. How are you doing, Jason?
I'm doing, I don't know, pretty damn good now that I'm talking to you.
Thank you.
Hey, how old would you have been when you got into TNT? About 20?
21, yeah.
How does a New York guy, I don't maybe if you were in New York then or not, but an American 21-year-old end up with a Norwegian metal band? I always found that fascinating once I found out you were American.
Yeah, and looking back, it's probably more fascinating if you consider there was no internet, no social media and so forth. It was a surprise to me too. I was in a band in New York called The Jackals, not to be mistaken or confused with Jackal. they came later.
Did you guys also have chainsaws or not?
No.
Okay.
And this was The Jackals, and we were a pretty popular cover band in New York. We played for about 1,000 people often in some of the clubs. So we were doing a show in Manhattan. It was kind of a big show for us. And and two guys came backstage with a tape. One of them was Mike Varney, that some people might know. He's responsible for discovering quite a few famous guitar players. And this guy who was managing the band, TNT at the time, and they gave me a tape, and they gave me – I'll just try to tell the abbreviated story.
Sure.
So the quick story is that they fired their singer in the midst of recording Knights of the New Thunder, and they had Gary Barden. Apparently, he was going to be the singer. They had a plane ticket for him. This is a story I was told. And in the 11th hour, they got a demo of me. Now, every band, I was in a lot of bands when I was coming up in the ranks, and I would always try to record demos just to make sure I had, you know, got something, you know, that I could show for my time in any band I was in. So I had amassed a pretty good collection of songs, different styles and so forth. So it somehow to this day, I'm not really sure how it ended up in Norway, and it ended up in Ronnie's hands. And Ronnie said, "Hold the phone. Do not fly that guy here. Let's find this American guy." So they came backstage. They told me the story. They gave me a tape, and they said I had a very little time to make a decision, and that once I said yes, I would be on a plane, headed over there to record an album for. They were signed to Polygram, which is now Universal, in Norway. And they weren't signed outside of Norway. So I thought to myself, this is great. It'll be, if that's all it is, it'll be a great demo. And I'll be able to go back to my band in New York and we'll continue. But I'll have a little more credibility and success maybe to bring to the table to help my band. But after we finished the record, things changed really quick. So we then got signed to each territory started picking the album up, and it just kind of spread like wildfire. It was suddenly in Japan, it was all over Europe, and then soon after we got the call from the American office that they wanted to do a brand new deal for the band worldwide out of New York. So that's when everything was real quick. But yeah, that's the very quick story. There are a lot of details I skipped over, but that's
of course.
The quick.
So if they flew you to Norway, how quick would you have left New York?
I think it was within 2 weeks I was over there after that night that they came backstage, something like that.
Now, I'm guessing you didn't speak Norwegian then. Do you speak any now?
I understand it better than I speak it.
Okay.
But I speak a little bit.
Okay. The first record that you were on, then Knights of the New Thunder, was that mostly written before you got involved?
It was entirely written, but I went in, they said I could do kind of what I wanted. So I went in and, I altered lyrics and melodies quite a bit especially on verses. Some of the choruses, I didn't like the words, so I changed completely and maybe I kept the melody sometimes. It just depended on each song. Each song I took as its own thing, and I said, okay, what can I do to make this fit my voice better? And, you know, and also the lyrics sometimes weren't really, I didn't think were good enough, or didn't make sense or whatever the case may be. But, I mean, all great. You know, great songs, great maps for me to work with. I just kind of went in and touched things. There were a couple of songs I kind of wish, you know, if we had more time to record a few extra things with me and write a few extra things from scratch, I would have loved that. But we didn't have the time. So it's a good slice of time. Some people like that record better than any of the other ones. It's a matter of taste, I guess.
Yeah, I have friends that turned me on to TNT that feel that way. For me, it's definitely the next one, Tell No Tales, that really grabbed me.
Tell No Tales is the first record that Ronnie and I actually sat down and wrote the whole album together. So it's
It sounds so much different? I mean, it was there like a concentrated effort to almost Americanize the band?
Well, certainly the labels were. You know, at that point when we were writing that album, it was 1985, 86 period into those 2 years. And so by that time, the commercial hard rock thing was really taken off in the States. So, you know, the label wanted hits. They wanted more melody and more radio friendly sound. But I think we managed to keep things heavy and melodic at the same time. You know, looking back on it, I think, I'm proud of everything that we did, but I have to say, I think our original vision of keeping it more metal, you know, that's probably something that, I wish we didn't bend quite so much, but hey, it's all history. It's all behind us and no regrets, you know?
I know locally here, the song 10,000 Lovers got a decent amount of traction, with the radio airplay. But, for me, it was always the opening track. Everyone's a Star is such a killer tune. Ever just pull that out and play it with some of your other projects?
Live? No.
Yeah.
No, I don't even like doing that song with TNT. It's just ridiculous.
Too much?
It's just, yeah, I mean, it's over the top, you know.
You do get pretty high there.
But, you know, but I'm a strange person to talk to about my own music. You know, I'm that guy that's very proud of what we accomplished as a team, as a band. I'm really super proud of it. And we, you know, that album in general did really well for us worldwide, as did Intuition and Nights. But, and some of the other ones as well. And when I play the songs live, I'm having a great time because I can see how the audience is so into it that it's fun, you know. But I'm not necessarily, you know, a huge fan of you know, of stuff I did in the 80s, you know. I think for you know, like most people, I mean, I love 70s music a lot more than 80s music. So I guess it just is like most people, whatever you sort of grew up on is what you tend to gravitate toward. Since we were actually playing, you know, with that whole 80s thing. Yeah, there were groups I really liked. But for the most part, I really didn't listen to a lot of other hard rock bands. I was kind of trying to get, you know, inspiration from other things, from other kinds of music, but no, to answer your question, I have to play TNT songs live when I do my own shows, but that's not one of them.
Well, Intuition was a little more of a, I don't know, it seemed like a, it was definitely more toned down version of the band. Was this the peak of how like thick and massive your hair got?
I don't know. I mean,
some incredible hair, man.
I think it was just more about the music, you know. I mean, we got into some pretty. I think we got into some pretty cool. I thought it was, you know, considering how young we still were, and where we were going musically. I thought that record was really an interesting step forward for us, you know. Compared to, I think that's where we sort of fell into, I guess the writing that Ronnie and I were doing had kind of matured a little more, and you know, and we did really well with that one over here, and also in Japan and Europe as well. So it was a tie charting album in a lot of countries.
Well, the title track is really cool, and Caught Between the Tigers is always a favorite of mine.
Yeah, I mean, Forever Shine On, we play all the time. That's a pretty heavy, you know, powerful song, and you know, so. Yeah, I mean, it had a good combination of a lot of color and texture, and you know, some great ballads, but also some really great mid tempo and really heavy stuff too. So it was a good. So overall, I really like that. I'm very proud of it. The hair, you know, it just kept growing. What can I do about it, you know? I kind of
I'm glad you came back to that.
Well, I hate the term hair metal, and I hate
where I was going with it.
I
was doing some research today. There's a video of you and Ronnie playing, I think, Tonight I'm Falling, like an acoustic thing or something quick like that. And it's right around the time this record came out, and I was just like, oh my Lord, his hair is just. I mean, you had to be going through tons of conditioner.
I don't know what that was that you saw. It might have been the next tour after that.
Okay.
Realized Fantasies, because we did do some acoustic stuff in Japan for
sure,
that.
Yeah, I'm not positive. It seemed around the time. You also kind of adapted, for lack of a better term, a bit of a hippie image clothing-wise as a band.
I think that was going more into the real life. Yeah, it was kind of out of out of intuition into the realized fantasies period. I think that was kind of going on. I mean, you know, that's how I kind of grew up on 60s, 70s stuff. And I think, you know, I was just trying to do something that felt right to me and was a little different from everybody else. But I don't know.
was there like an official break from TNT? Did you guys call it quits as you were getting into doing like Morning Wood and Westworld?
We you know, Ronnie claims I quit in 92, but I don't remember it that way. I remember it clearly as he wanted to start Vagabond, and we were just both frustrated. I think we were more frustrated with how hard we had worked from 84 through 92. And we started to see a lot of success in everywhere, in America, in Europe. It was amazing in Japan. And then it just kind of, we felt like the label and a lot of things that were kind of, you know, going on just sort of pulled us away from the trajectory. And I think it was frustrating for us. So I think we were burnt out, and we just needed, after the Realized Fantasies record, it was a really hard album to do. So I think we were just burnt out. We needed a break.
And talk about that a little bit, because it did seem there was a lack of a push after the Tell No Tales record in America here.
No, Intuition got a really good push. I mean, it did, in all fairness.
I'm going off of memory, but...
No, we did two videos, just like we did for Tell No Tales. We got a lot of airplay. We did a sold-out tour in the U.S. The problem was more that the band, the Norwegian guys in the band, didn't want to stay and keep touring like we needed to tour, because once we finished the American headline tour, we easily could have jumped on other tours and opened, you know, for bigger bands, which is what I wanted to do.
Okay.
So, no, I think the label was very behind us, and I think that the success was there. I think Intuition sold pretty much the same as Tell No Tales, but that's not what you want. You want it to be more, you know. Mm-hmm. The only thing that they should have done that they didn't do is put a ballad out, and I think that's a sad thing, because TNT is kind of, for the, you know, the fans know the band for putting out, you know, a lot of ballads, and being that ballads were breaking bands in the 80s, it's weird that TNT didn't have one video for any of our ballads. So
that is a great point.
But I think the support from the label was more missing from the Realized Fantasies record. You know, that was around the time that, you know, Nirvana hit and all those bands hit, and the record came out around the same time. And I remember seeing the Nirvana video on MTV, and I instantly knew. I think the first time I saw it, I just was like, yeah, this is going to change things for everybody, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think that you hear that story quite a bit.
Yeah, but my take on it is different. A lot of my peers and a lot of the fans are like, oh, I hate that shit. Grunge killed, you know, our music. I don't see it that way at all. I think the labels started signing way too many bands that looked and sounded like other bands. And there was never really a rock era that was like that before. Because if you think about the 70s, you had a lot of different styles of big hard rock bands. You had, on one side, you had Zeppelin, you had Deep Purple. They were very different from each other. You had Aerosmith. They were different. You had Kiss. You had Judas Priest. You had all these really very Black mm-hmm. Sabbath. You had all these different bands that were very, very not like each other at all, but they were all hard rock. And they looked a little different. They had their own image. And then all of a sudden in the 80s, everybody wanted the same clothes, the same hair, the same looking, the same guys, you know, the same producers, same songwriters. And that's going to kill a genre faster than a new, mm-hmm. you know, if anything, when Nirvana and Soundgarden, these bands came out, it shined a really harsh light on how boring and repetitive and repetitive everything got, because it would have made more sense to take the bands that were like already established, big and medium, you know, and developed them more, rather than to get all these other bands that sounded like other bands, you know.
Like who? Who are you talking about?
Oh, I'm not going to say that. No, I'm not going to say that.
I totally agree. We actually did a segment, you know, I'm not going to name the bands. I'm not going to put you on the spot and try to get you to agree. But we actually said Nirvana didn't kill the 80s metal scene, whatever you want to call it. Then we listed off a bunch of bands that we think did from that scene. Kind of the point you're making. To your point, too, you saw that same pattern happen with grunge. The big ones were all kind of very different sounding bands. The Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, they didn't sound like each other at all. Kind of like what you're talking about with the 70s and the early part of the 80s metal stuff. But suddenly record labels were signing bands that just kind of copied that sound.
Yeah. And looked, and, you know, like I said, everybody, it was the same look, the same songwriters, the same producers, yeah. And it just started to be, I mean, you know, nobody was offering anything. You know, there were a few, don't get me wrong, there were a few that got in there that were interesting and different, but for the most part, they were all just sort of rehashes slightly of other bands, you know, so.
What was the first thing you did away from TNT then?
That was probably the Morningwood record, yeah. And every day this world is pushing me around. Even when I hit the ground, I'll be running. Over mountains, through the valleys of my mind. I could leave it all behind. Every morning when I kiss your sleepy eyes, like a beautiful sunrise for me. And I don't have to feel the darkness of the night, cause you cover me with light and your love opens a door. Business-wise, it was a stupid move, but for me, it was I really, really wanted to establish something. Just, you know, artistically, I needed to make a totally different statement. You know, I just needed to do something else, because the way I always viewed it was I was a singer and songwriter first, and I just happened to be successful. Don't get me wrong, I loved hard rock and metal. And that band was perfect for me when I was 21 years old. And I heard that it was the perfect combination of things. It was exactly what I was looking for. But I grew up on a lot of different music. And so when I got to the point of going out and doing acoustic shows, it made sense for me to want to just be seen as a singer and not just a screamer. So that's kind of why I did that record, is I wanted to just kind of, you know, show that there was a lot more to what I was about than just high screaming. You know, I mean, yeah, I could do it. That was a thing I did for sure. But it wasn't it surely wasn't the at all what made up the. All of what I was, you know, as an artist. So
did you ever feel like going back and doing more of that, or?
I have done more of it. I did the Mercury Train album in 2010. It's acoustic versions of a lot of TNT, Westworld, Starbreaker stuff. And then I did a Wildflowers album EP in 2013, which is mostly, it might be all original songs. Actually, it is all original songs. So maybe one cover, actually. I have to look at the track list, but anyway, I think, but yeah, so I've been doing acoustic stuff most of the last, gosh, I don't know, 10 years or so, at least.
I mean, do you still stay in contact with some of these guys? Like, most notably, I suppose, Al Petrelli?
A little bit, not a lot, but a little bit. And, You know, yeah, I mean, I stay in touch with everybody that wants to stay in touch. Yeah,
okay,
absolutely. Yeah.
Where does Westworld fall in your timeline? Is that before kind of the TNT reunion or?
It kind of overlapped a few records. So we did Firefly. TNT Firefly was 97. The first Westworld was 98. And then we did another TNT album in 99 that came out in 2000, I think. And then I did another Westworld album around the same period that came out maybe 2000, also 99 or 2001.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly, but there was they kind of overlapped. And then we got back together for the first time in 2002.
Yeah.
So
I really like the second TNT record you were talking about is the, Transistor one, right?
In that late
90s,
period?
early 2000s,
yeah.
I had kind of lost track of what was going on because a lot of what you were doing wasn't being, at least TNT-wise, wasn't, you know, coming overseas immediately, or at least the stores I was in. But I found that record. I absolutely adore that album.
Me too. Somebody on my Instagram page asked me if I ever wanted to go back and fix anything that I've done. And what I said was, no, I'd like to take Firefly and Transistor and I'd like to remix both albums and pick the best songs from both of those albums and put them together into one great album. Because I think combined, there's a really great album there between the two. Probably leaning heavier on Transistor than Firefly, but there are some great songs on the Firefly album as well that I still play live.
Which ones?
On my acoustic shows, I play Month of Sundays sometimes. I play Daisy Jane. I play, let's see, oh man. I have played Somebody Told You. There's a few from that record that I really like. I like both those albums quite a bit.
What about Transistor? Anything on that you kind of pull out for?
I haven't played anything from that album live that I can think of outside of TNT. But Ronnie and I were in a really fun creative period when we made that album. It was a blast to write in Spain together.
Okay.
It was just kind of he and I on a bit of a really amazing lost weekend, I guess you could say, that went on for about a month or so, or 6 weeks. I don't remember how long we were there. And we were just very, very creative during the period we were there. We had a little studio set up for demoing things. And then we rolled right from that back to Norway and right into the studio. So it was a really fun creative period.
Right off the top of that record, you guys knock it out with Just Like God. I can't remember the second song, Wide Awake, and then No Such Thing is one of my favorite songs you've ever written.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. I've had people tell me that didn't even know TNT before that album that came to like the band because of that album, like younger fans. There were things about that record that touched on a lot of the late 90s sound that was coming out of England and the U.S. It was a weird combination of American hard rock from the 90s mixed with a British kind of thing that was happening at the time. So it's kind of cool.
No, it's whatever. That'd be one that maybe you throw in there just for me. There's at least three to my knowledge. I've seen one of them, cover bands, Of AC/DC called TNT. You have any thoughts on that?
Well, when I joined the band in 84, I was one of the things I really tried to convince them right off the bat. I tried to convince them to change the name. That was one of the first things, and they got sick of it because I would not let it go. I was like really harping on that quite a bit. I really hated the name. I thought it was generic. I thought we'd have trouble with it in the future. I just didn't think it represented the music at all. I thought the music was, you know, lush and diverse and interesting. And I didn't think that name did our music justice. So, you know, it is what it is. I don't know really what your question was exactly, but yeah. I'm aware. I'm aware, for example, that if I hashtag TNT when I'm trying to post something, that what comes up is anything from the network to the moving to the shipping company to a host of things, and it's kind of ridiculous and it's kind of a shame. So, but you know what? It is what it is. It's just one of the many things that drives me a little crazy, but what can I do?
You actually answered a question I didn't ask. That was great. I agree, man. Yeah, I think they should have changed the name. I don't think I was drawn into the group because of the name of the band.
I think a lot of people probably missed the music. I think because of probably in many ways because they were probably turned off by the name. I'm fully convinced that if the name was different, the band would have probably been. It's one of those things where some people say, "Oh, it's not the name, it's the music." No, I think sometimes it might be the name. In our case, I think it is. Yeah.
Well, it definitely helps. You know what I mean? I think you make especially now with, the age of the internet, it's almost better if you have something that sticks out. You know what I mean? Because TNT is pretty generic.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you ended up quitting the band in 2006 because is that because you spent 20 years trying to convince them to change the name?
I actually, you know, that was the only time I actually legitimately did quit was 2006.
Ooh, this sounds interesting.
No, it's just that there are a lot of things out there that say I quit, you know, he's in, he's out, you know, but there's a lot more to it than that. Sometimes it was just a break. Sometimes it was, you know, who knows, but,
okay.
2006, no, it was about it was just business stuff. It wasn't anything really deeply personal per se. It was mostly just business. Usually it was, disagreeing about a manager or how we should go forward. And
now,
you know, that was it. Nothing more to say about it, really.
But TNT was largely not doing anything in America for the most part, right? So you had to do a lot of travel, right?
That was by choice often because we had a lot of really good offers here. But again, the business, people bother me all the time. When are you going to play over here? When are you going to play? I'm like, man, I want to so bad. It just didn't happen. This is our job. So if you're doing well someplace, you'll tend to want to stay there and keep, you know, pushing at it. But at the same time, we had offers here and the guys, just didn't see the value of coming over. And I did, I thought, let's just go do a couple of shows, reestablish the band, and then we can, you know, keep building on it without losing too much.
You can't even do like a Monsters of Rock cruise or anything like that?
Well, like we were booked on it, weren't we? In 2000.
apparently.
We were in 2017. We were booked on it and Ronnie couldn't get a visa. So I had to go do an acoustic show.
Okay.
So we actually would have been booked on that and that would have probably been good for us to just kind of, you know, ease back into the U.S. market again. But alas, it was not meant to be.
Tony Mills replaced you initially, the guy from Shy. Did you know him at all, or
no? Mm-mm.
Were they kind of like, we need another singer named Tony?
That's funny. That's almost like the hair comment together with the Intuition album.
Yeah, that's a cool. I'm trying to get a chuckle out of you at some point.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm sorry. I know. Yeah. You know, that was probably more interesting for Diesel than anybody else because in his mind, I think he always felt that if he could somehow make me unimportant to the band, then he'd be a happy guy. But no, Tony Mills is a great guy. I actually, when I left in 2006, I gave them a list of singers that I thought would be potentially able to at least hit the notes. Yeah. And he was on the list. So I mm-hmm. guess they went down the list and he was the guy that said yes.
No, I'm only familiar with a couple songs that they had in the 80s. But yeah, he's definitely a guy who's in your kind of range of singing. So I get it.
Yeah. And he ended up moving to Norway, as far as I think he still lives there. I'm not sure. I think he settled down in Norway after that. So,
but you came back in 2013 and again in 2016. Maybe kind of tie in what you were saying earlier that you never really quit, but you're not really in the band now, are you?
No, I'm not at the moment. And ironically, we have a DVD coming out in March for a show we did in 2017 in Italy. So, you know, there's that, but, which is odd that they're out there playing shows, you know, with somebody else. And there's this DVD coming out.
Yeah.
It's a very bizarre thing.
And it turns
thing.
Out they're going to be on the Monsters of Rock cruise.
What's that?
It turns out they're going to be on the Monsters of Rock cruise.
Who's that?
Oh, just a joke. I'm trying to make you chuckle, Tony. I'm just trying to.
Oh, sorry. I'm not getting your humor. I apologize.
You're not the first person.
There's a lot going on behind the scenes. So it's sort of like you're. Anyway, it's.
No problem.
It's fine.
DVD, will that be available to Americans without importing it, or
all the record? Yeah, everything that Frontiers puts out is available over here. So,
oh, okay. You guys are label mates now, aren't you?
Well, I don't even think they're really together. We weren't label mates. We were signed with me in the band, and then I was out of the band. So It was the same. It was the same album that was signed when I was there. And it just bled into the record that they ended up putting out with that has some of my songs on it that came out at the beginning of last year or whenever it came out, point last year.
Do you still talk to Ronnie at all?
I talk to him all the time. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He actually has the flu right now. We were going to speak today. So.
All right. Well, give him my best.
Okay.
Did you really write music for Sonic the Hedgehog, the video game?
No, I did not. No, I don't know.
Okay, so Wikipedia is all fucked up.
It is, yeah. And I don't know where. I don't even know where. Is that on my Wikipedia page?
No. I'm not looking at it right now.
I don't think it's on mine. No, I never wrote anything for it. I just was asked to sing a couple songs, and I did.
So you did actually do. Okay.
I sang, but I didn't write anything, yeah.
Maybe I worded the question poorly. So you actually worked on some music for a video game.
Writing and singing are, yeah, I wouldn't, if I, I wish they'd asked me to write. I would have fun writing some stuff for that. No, I just, Ted Poley was a part of it, and I was asked to sing on it, so I did, yeah.
And actually,
it was a great thing to do. I got a lot of young fans from that, so it was turned out to be really a cool thing. A lot of my younger fans really know me from the Sonic thing. It's funny, and then they went and they did their research and they got into TNT and all the other stuff I do.
Cool.
Yeah.
I thought you were great in Skid Row. How come that didn't work out?
Well, I'm not going to go into, I mean, you know, the way I look at it with interviews is if I haven't said anything in any previous interviews, you know, or any statements I've posted, you won't get more out of me now. But all I can say is the same thing I've said before and the same thing they've said. It wasn't a match. And the way that I quit was unfortunate. So if I had to change anything, I wouldn't change joining the band. I thought it was fun, and I thought we had some great shows together, especially toward the end of the run that I had mm-hmm. with them. But my biggest regret is just the way I quit the band, and I don't want to elaborate on that anymore.
No, I know what you're talking about there, and I do think you kind of handled that pretty well after the fact, as far as, you know, all the stuff. And if people want to Google that and get into it, they'll find it what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But was it a personality thing, just a bad fit, as far as like people working together?
Again, it's just generally speaking, I think it was, I think they are great guys. I really do. I actually had a lot of fun, during most of the shows. I just think it was, just wasn't, it just wasn't, it didn't work out.
Okay. All right.
It was similar to, you know, failed marriages I've had, I guess, you know?
Oh, okay.
Or that anyone else has had. You know?
Yeah. All right. Well, I tried twice, Tony. I'm going to let it go. you recorded a cover of, was it I Remember You with them? Did you guys do anything else? Like, was there any?
We did 18 in Life. No, we didn't. That was something I was really looking forward to, but we didn't get to that point. I think it would have been an interesting, I was hoping to have some, you know, to combine my writing with theirs and maybe, you know, do something kind of cool together, but it wasn't to be.
I would have liked it, but anyway.
Well, thank you.
Starbreaker has a brand new record coming out, Dysphoria, on the end of the month here at the 25th of January.
Yeah.
Frontiers Records. Yeah. Let's talk about that. Why don't we?
Sure. Have you heard it?
I've only heard two songs. But no, I checked out the evil one.
Pure Evil was the first song. Yeah, which isn't like the rest of the record, but it was a song that got everybody's attention. So that was pretty much what we wanted to do.
Yeah, I loved it.
Thanks.
So talk about that, because the other song I heard was the
How many more goodbyes?
Yep, they are very different sounding. So you're saying that represents the record better, or?
I think they both kind of do, but it's kind of a diverse album. The way Magnus sort of put it to me was probably the way his wife described it was probably the best description, which was kind of a like about as heavy as you can get and still be quote. Melodic and commercial, I guess. Yeah. And but I don't like those words, commercial, melodic. To me, it's just the songwriting, I think, evolved a little bit for this record. You know, I'm really happy with how it came out. I think it's a really cool album. And you know, it's got dark colors and medium and light, and it's a lot of emotion put into it lyrically, that's for sure.
And this is actually the third Starbreaker record, correct? I was not aware of this project of yours at all.
Yeah, this is the third one, all through Frontiers.
Okay.
And it's a project I'm really proud of. All records are really, really great. I mean, I'm happy. I love working with Magnus. He's a killer guitar player, great, great writing partner, and. You know, just very creative guy and really fun to work with. We really have a good chemistry together when it comes to these records. So, yeah, I'm really proud of him. I kind of steer when people want to know like the harder side of what I do. I would steer them toward these albums and the Westworld even.
So, yeah. No, the Westworld stuff I find amazing. I think the Westworld stuff kind of reminds me a little bit of the vibe you had on Transistor. It's different. I mean, I'm generalizing when I say that.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, all three Westworld albums are definitely different, as are the Starbreaker records. But I think the Starbreaker albums are a little more. This one I think is different. Well, they're all actually, I have to say, they're all different from each other. but I think the one thing that Magnus and I have is I think there's a consistency in what we do. And I think that ties the three records, you know, ties them into each other.
How did you and Magnus end up coming together?
It was put together by Frontiers, actually. While I was in TNT, the president of Frontiers had been had been bugging me for a while to do something with him, with his label. And I was kind of resisting and resisting. And then mm-hmm. he came up with this idea, and it worked. Actually, 2005 was when the first record came out, and I was really busy writing and recording and touring 2004, 2005. I don't know how I did it, but I managed to tour both years and put out, My Religion in 2004, which is, to me, the best TNT album ever made. And then I put out, the first Starbreaker came out in 2005. And then another TNT album came out in 2005. And then I also did a third project called Brazen Abbott, where I did three songs. So there was it was a busy period for me. So Dysphoria, so that's coming out
yes.
January 25th. I'm really proud of it.
By Starbreaker, is the artist.
Yeah. Starbreaker, yeah. Starbreaker, Dysphoria, that comes out the 25th. We have I'm actually working on two videos at the same time right now, but I just saw the beginning of the lyric video that's going to come out in conjunction with the release for a song called Wild Butterflies.
Okay.
And it looks amazing. I have to say, I'm really loving some of the creativity that goes into these lyric videos. It's really incredible what these guys are doing these days. But anyway, I'm really excited about that, and I'm excited for people to hear the whole record and get into the whole thing as a piece of work, you know. Mm-hmm. too much these days it's about singles, and still in the rock world I think it's still about the album as a whole work, you know.
Yeah,
as you're sort of moving from song to song and so forth.
I assume you're heavily involved in sequencing as far as all that stuff.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. I try to do it together with whoever is playing guitar. But yeah, I try to base it on a few different things. Sometimes you can't quite get everything you want when you're putting songs back to back. I try not to put the same keys next to each other, songs in the same key, but that becomes really hard sometimes with hard rock. It was a little bit easier with TNT because Ronnie was a little bit more on top of making sure we didn't have too many songs. As we were writing, we would both want to make sure we would have varying keys all the time. But that's unusual. Most people don't do that. So that can get difficult. So you want to have that. You want to have tempos, you know, be sort of, you know, move and ebb and flow. You got to put the ballads in the right place so mm-hmm. that the album doesn't get too boring too early. Yeah, so it's always a bit of a kind of, you want that explosive beginning, and you want kind of like that, you know, great little you get into the record. I think this record is sequenced really well. You have that right off the bat with Pure Evil is the opening track, and then it kind of, you know, glides into what becomes kind of the, you know, the feel for most of the record on song two. So yeah, I'm really happy with how it came out. I think people are really going to like it. And I put a lot of love into recording the lyrics and, I mean, recording the vocals and writing the lyrics and the melodies and working on the music with Magnus. And he did a fantastic job, really. And the drummer, everybody, Johnny Lightfoot on bass, is an American friend of mine. Everybody just did a great job on this thing. I'm really proud of it.
When did you record it kind of in the modern era, where you're kind of bouncing things back and forth, or did you do kind of a traditional thing where you all work together in a studio at one time?
We did do it long distance. I have a really great high-end vocal studio in my house, so I did it myself.
Okay.
I did my vocals. I did all that. So normally what I would do is just put a track up and write the melodies and the lyrics and even sing the final vocals, usually within the first night, and then just kind of fix things up on day two, and that would pretty much be it. And that's how we did most of the record.
I could never be what you want me to be. I could never do. To do for you.
So, Tony, before I let you go, let me just ask you this. I mean, thank you for joining the podcast. Are you a fan of podcasting? Has it been a help for you at all?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And actually, I'd love to do one. I've got an idea for one that I'm kind of excited to take a look at, so they could take a look at myself. And I have some friends that have some really successful ones that I you know, love. I just did an interview with my buddy Mitch LaFon the other day.
Okay. And, up in Canada, eh?
Yeah, yeah. And he's great. And yeah, so of course, I mean, this is what we do now. You know, mm-hmm. This is I've done some video ones as well.
With music kind of shifting away from the physical product and into streaming, how do we get some of the streaming money into the artists a little easier?
Good question. You know, I think some of the bigger artists are actually experimenting with not even allowing their songs to be on the streaming sites. But that's obviously not something that's a good idea, maybe, for I'm not sure yet what the answer is. You don't want to piss people off. It's kind of weird how the power has completely shifted out of the artist's hands. You spend time, and people don't like your album if you don't spend enough time making it sound amazing and writing great songs and spending all that money in the studio and mixing it properly and producing and yet at the same time they've gotten used to getting their music almost for free. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of I don't really know how to answer your question. I mean, I think that the vinyl movement is great to see, but it certainly is not even a small dent in the overall sales compared to sure. Digital and mostly streaming. I think streaming is obviously way, way ahead of downloads, you know, so.
Mm-hmm. And sadly, yeah. We missed it during the recording, but you talked about there was initial plans for Starbreaker to be on vinyl, but for right now, it's put on hold.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm hoping for a box set at some point in the future. It'd be great.
It really would. Well, thank you so much, Tony, for your time. Again, this album, Starbreaker, Dysphoria, comes out on the 25th of January on Frontier Records. We can find you on Facebook at Tony Harnell. Plug yourself a little bit.
I'm all over Instagram, which has become my favorite platform to use these days. Mm-hmm. So Instagram, I have an official Facebook page. You can find me there, Tony Harnell Official. Instagram is Tony Harnell Official, and Twitter is just Tony Harnell. I'm relatively active everywhere, so please follow me and interact. And if you have, people want to ask me something, normally I'll answer if it's not too crazy.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is I was working as a photographer and up in Hinckley, Minnesota, when you were playing there with Skid Row. And I posted a picture of you, and a friend of mine commented, "How did he sound?" And you actually replied to his comments. That was a big thrill for him and me.
Okay. What did I say? I sounded like crap or something?
No, you said, he said, "Well, how did Tony sound?" And you were like, "I think he sounded great."
Oh, I was, okay. Yeah, I think he sounded great. That sounds like me. Yeah,
yeah, no, and you did. Yeah, funny. You did sound great that day.
Well, no, but I mean, I think what I really meant by that was just to step in and say it be me.
Sure, you're being cheeky. Yeah,
I was being cheeky, but... I don't know if I sounded great that night or not, but
I do. I can testify. So.
Oh well, thank you. I think I remember that night. That was wasn't Eric Martin backstage as well?
He was. Yes. Yeah.
I don't remember a lot about every show, but I do remember Jack Russell. I remember Eric being at a show. Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I have a picture of Eric and I on my Instagram page from that night. So, yeah.
You know, with that, how do you stay? You really, have maintained a good youthful look. You're in great shape. Any Thanks. Secrets you want to share? No.
No. I mean, I try to eat, I try to eat well, even when I have other habits that I've had that aren't so great over the years. I try to keep that one thing going. I try to eat organic. I try to eat, I just try to eat well. That's like a big thing for me. Exercise in and out. Sometimes I'm good with it. Sometimes I'm not so good with it. Living in New York was easy because you walk so much that, you know, if you do a little bit in the house with your, you know, with push-ups and a few things like that, and then you get, you know, get out and walk several miles a day, you're usually pretty good.
Okay.
I'm finding it a little more challenging here in Nashville because it's not a lot. There's not a lot of walking here. So
a little more spread out.
Yeah. I'm definitely more driving for sure down here, but thanks for the compliment. I appreciate it. Yeah. I just think it's part of it's probably just luck and who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, genetics, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Tony.
I think part of it though is that I still have hair, and I think that I'm not bragging at all. I'm just saying that probably helps because I could probably look exactly the same, and if I didn't, I might look older. So you know,
yeah,
that definitely has something
to do with it. Yeah,
I'm not responsible for that. My genetics are, and so it's not something to be proud of. You know, just like it's great. I root for the Chargers because I was born in San Diego.
Nice.
And if they win, I'll be happy. But I'm not proud of them because I don't have anything to do with them winning. You know, it's kind of funny.
It's valid. By the way, they're the one because my team is the Vikings, obviously. So they were my team. I'm like, they're the one. That's the only thing I'm going to root for them, period. For whatever reason, I like them.
Oh, awesome. Well, they do have the coolest uniforms with the lightning.
Second
bolt,
coolest.
Okay. But you know, I mean, being that I've been in Norway so much, the Viking helmet, you know, that works.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, you're probably sick of it, huh? How many guys named Bjorn do you know?
I know a few. Yeah, I know a few. I know a lot of guys with. There are some very typical names that are not Bjorn as well. Yeah, but I know a few of those. I know a lot of Rolfs. R-O-L-F. Yeah, I know a lot of those.
Tony, thank you so much for your time. Hopefully I came across as respectful and someone who's actually gives a crap about your career because I'm a bit starstruck at a few moments here tonight.
Well, thank you very much.
And hopefully I'll see you in Nashville this summer, but we'll see how that works out.
Sounds great, Jason. Thank you.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.